Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 439. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about dramatic granite landscapes, wonderful seafood, and at least one affectionate moose as we go to West Sweden. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. This episode of Amateur Travelers, again sponsored by BloggerBridge. If you're a company looking to connect with content creators, try bloggerbridge.com. If you're a company that wants to reach travelers, then you too can sponsor Amateur Traveler. Send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Brett Love from greenglobaltravel.com. And Brett has come to talk to us about West Sweden. Brett, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Glad to be here.
And this one's a little odd because I was also just in West Sweden, so it's going to be Brett and I both a little bit talking about where to go in West Sweden, although Brett, we're going to let you take the lead on that because you were there a little longer. I was there on more of a packaged trip, I think, than you were on, but we were both working somewhat with the West Sweden Tourism Board when we were there.
Mm-hmm. That's correct, yeah.
What's your take on why someone should go to West Sweden?
Well, as you know, our focus with Green Global Travel is really on ecotourism and nature and outdoors and culture. And we were really struck by how green, both in the literal and metaphorical sense, Sweden is. I mean, they've got so many green initiatives from the cities with the public transportation system and the rental bike system and no trash anywhere on the streets. But then you also go out in the countryside and they've got just these amazingly pastoral towns and fishing villages on the coast, and the people are just so friendly. I mean, it's basically the complete package as far as I'm concerned in terms of what you want in a travel experience. It had everything that I needed.
The interesting thing for me is, as I flew into Gothenburg, and Gothenburg is really the gateway city for West Sweden, second biggest city in Sweden. As I flew in, going over all of these evergreen forests and farms and such, and I thought it looked very beautiful, but I thought it just kind of looks like a lot of different places. So my original impression was I wasn't really struck by the beauty of the place, but then we went from there up to the Norwegian border, that area in between.
Mm-hmm.
And it's solid granite.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the most interesting landscape because it's basically this solid granite area where in the water it's turned into these granite islands. And I think for me, and we'll talk more about this later, the weather islands were the ones that really stood out in my memory as just these interesting archipelago of little tiny rock islands. Mm-hmm. And then in the interior, it's still solid granite with little tiny farms wedged in between these granite outcroppings. And at that point, it was a very different experience. It's like, oh, well, wow, this is a dramatic landscape.
Well, that's the thing for us. Our tour was sponsored by Volvo, and they actually gave us a car. Okay. So we drove around for 8 days, and we drove over 500 kilometers over the course of this 8 days, and just going from town to town and seeing how different Gothenburg was from, say, the Koster Islands and Kosterhavets National Marine Park. And then you go over to Lake Hornborge and you see the lake and the ecosystem around there. And then you see the pastoral farms or the canals. There's just so many different little things all kind of tightly packed into this one little area that you can drive in a week, which was amazing.
Well, we should actually, we should mention the Volvo thing, because by the time I got to Gothenburg just on the airport bus, I had run into at least one person who had done that, that this was their second trip to Sweden, and their first trip was the not the what you did with a sponsored tour, but you can buy a Volvo and drive it around for 2 weeks in Sweden and then ship it back to the U.S. as a used car and save a lot on taxes. And so a lot of people who visit this area do it in a Volvo. I mean, they really do the kind of driving tour that you're doing, because Volvo is centered in Gothenburg.
That's exactly it. And that's why we were sent over. They wanted to promote this, like you said, in a Volvo campaign. And so they chose four different blogging couples from around the world. And we were the eco-tourist couple, obviously. And it's
so
a
they
really
gave you the one with the best gas mileage, one would hope.
yeah, they did. And, basically put it on their site so that people who do this program that you're talking about, they can go there, and if they want to, for an additional charge, they can follow the exact route that we took around West Sweden and do some of the same activities that we did. So yeah, it's a really interesting program, and I understand if people want to, they can drive around Europe itself for months if they want to. And
yeah, I think you have to stay for at least, and I don't remember whether it's 2 weeks or a month or something, but you have to stay for a while so that it becomes a used car, to have basically where then what you save on taxes pays for the airfare.
Yeah, it was great, and I really think West Sweden is one of those regions where driving around and actually seeing the different parts, it makes a difference. Like, I think a road trip is the best way to see it, because it's just such beautiful driving. I mean, loved it.
I should mention before we go on, because I want to talk about your itinerary, that this isn't something that is unique to Sweden or even unique to Volvo. If you're interested, if you have a particular brand of car, especially European car, that you like, actually a number of the car companies have these kind of programs. So, but moving back to West Sweden, what itinerary can we reproduce if we go to that site, or where did you go?
Well, we started out in Gothenburg, as you mentioned, and we started out in this eco-friendly hotel that I think was the first eco-friendly hotel in Gothenburg. It was Hotel Liseberg Hayden, the first environmentally certified hotel in Sweden. So we started out there and we explored the city, and they've got a nice little area called Haga Old Town that's a historic district. So we spent a lot of time there. There's some great restaurants around there. One that we really loved was called SK Matt and I don't know how to pronounce this, SK Matt and Maniskor, which was sort of a farm.
And we should say that neither Brett or I speak Swedish, and we're probably going to mangle some of these Swedish words.
And we apologize to the Swedish people in advance. We loved your country, but did not grasp the language just yet. But anyway, it was like a farm-to-table restaurant. It was really great. And we went to this really interesting place called Gunnebo House and Gardens, which was a historic home that has now been turned into a tourist attraction, where they have their organic gardens on the premises and they grow all of the vegetables and foods that are served in their restaurant organically right there on the property. So that was really interesting. From there, we, like I said before, we headed out towards the Koster Islands, which are right below Norway, like literally.
They're right on the border, right?
Yeah. You can see Norway from there. Along the way, we stopped at this place I have to mention, because it wasn't on our itinerary, but it was so cool. It's a place called Grebbestad, which is a little tiny fishing village right there on the coast. And we went to a place called, oh man, I'm going to mangle this one bad, Everts Sjobad, which was a new B&B type place. But they're kind of famous because the two guys who run it, they're brothers. And apparently this little area that they're in has been written up in National Geographic and one other magazine as having the best oysters in the world. And the guy literally went out on his back porch with this huge net and just dipped it down into the bottom of the ocean right off his dock, pulled up these oysters, taught us how to shuck them ourselves and all of that. And we had locally made Swedish schnapps with it. And we just had oysters and schnapps for breakfast. Oh. It was just, and I can say I've eaten a lot of, I'm a foodie and I write a lot about food in my freelance work. It was the best oysters I've ever had in the world. And it was amazing because we weren't really supposed to go there. It was just kind of a, somebody suggested it and we said, sure, sounds great. It was amazing.
Well, and seafood is going to be a theme that you're going to see throughout that region.
Yes.
We really should say that the farms there, as I mentioned, in between these granite outcroppings weren't very big. And so for years, really, a lot of the economy, a lot of the food was coming from the sea, and that's still true. So you did that. We went out from Fjällbacka, Sweden, and did a trip out to the Weather Islands, which, again, I'll talk about a little bit later. But on the way out, we pulled up, they kept saying lobster traps, but then we heard later on that they were really a langoustine rather than a lobster. And basically pulled them right out of the traps and went to the islands and threw them in a pot and had fresh langoustine, which is a lobster-like creature. It's almost more like a sea saltwater crayfish.
Yeah, it's, to me, it's like halfway between a huge shrimp and a large crayfish and a lobster. It's kind of in between all those three.
Right. And they do have lobster there also, but it wasn't lobster season when we were there. But they basically still do some lobstering or langoustining. I don't know if that's really a verb, but it is today.
It is now, yeah.
And so they do that actually as part of this tourism experience, as they go out there and they pull up the weighted traps on some of the boats that are the tour boats that go out there between Fjällbacka and the Weather Islands. So yeah, and unfortunately for me, I'm not a huge seafood fan, but I did enjoy the seafood that I was having there as much as someone who is not a seafood fan can.
Oh my Lord. Oh my Lord.
But it is a little bit of a shame for someone like me to be going to West Sweden. So
I'm a huge seafood fan, and like I said, when we went to the Koster Islands, we stayed at Hotel Koster, and they had a restaurant there on the premises. Mm-hmm. And it's in the middle of it's called Kosterhavet, which is a national marine park. I think it's the first national marine park in Sweden. And we went out with them to pull up crab traps and that sort of stuff. And we did a little tour around, saw the sea lions and all of that kind of stuff. But then we came back and we had this meal, and they gave us this box that was like langoustine, those shrimp that are like the little pink sweet shrimp, and a couple other things all mixed into this like steamed seafood box. And it was just unreal how good it was. Oh my Lord.
And the Koster Islands, there's two large ones, the North and South Koster Islands. You were on the South Island, which is the larger of the two?
Correct. Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. I was there also. We did a bike tour of the island, actually.
Did you? Nice. Did you meet Stefan from Koster Garden? Did he go with you for the tour?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Does not sound familiar.
He has another like organic farm type place, and they have tourists come in and do lunch and tours. And he actually guided our bicycle tour around the island, which was really cool.
Now, they did have a small museum there right where the boat gets in that talks about the whole marine sanctuary. Unfortunately, most of the information in that museum was in Swedish.
Swedish, yeah.
Didn't get a lot of English in that museum. But if your Swedish is up to it, or if you can follow there was enough information to follow what was going on. One thing that I was surprised, you mentioned the marine sanctuary there, and this great big trench that comes into the archipelago there and therefore has a lot of sea life because of the currents and such. I had never heard of this. They have cold water coral.
Yep.
And I didn't even know such a thing existed. I mean, I've seen coral before, but I really didn't know. So there were types of plant life or types of animal life there that they were talking about that were taking me a little bit by surprise.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere that the area around there has 12,000 different species of marine and coral life there. But yeah, I mean, we did some diving over in Norway. We didn't actually do any in Sweden. And the water was extremely, extremely cold, even though it was the first week of June.
Right.
But
very
yeah.
clear also.
Yeah, very clear.
Since and the bottom is granite.
Yeah. And lots of life. I mean, all kinds of fish and nudibranchs and all of those sorts of things.
And what time of year were you there?
June, first week of June.
It was interesting to me because I was there in September, and I'm used to the water where I live here in the west coast of California has a very short continental shelf, and so our water is always cold. And the water there was really noticeably warmer than I'm used to, because we're used to water here in the 50s, and they were talking about water that was, I think, in the 70s, even in September.
Ooh.
So not bad.
Yeah, you got lucky. When we went, it was pretty darn cold. I mean, we wore a dry suit to go diving in Norway, and it was still very cold on your face, just like bracingly cold. There were people, to their credit, there were Norwegians who were visiting the Coaster Islands when we were there, who were swimming in bikinis and swim trunks like just nothing. I was amazed.
Now, you were there in June, so I'm guessing that the ferries were pretty full and the beaches were pretty full.
I'd say moderate. I wouldn't say they were full. Okay. And where we stayed, there weren't a ton of people out on the beaches. We were there, I think there was some sort of business thing. Apparently, the Norwegians have made a ton of money in recent years in oil. So a lot of the tourists that they would get coming to the Coaster Islands were coming from Norway, and they would rent it out for these huge business affairs. And it was really interesting because, boy, they were drinking like crazy, and they were having this huge dinner. And like every 5 minutes, somebody would get up and clink their glass and make a toast, which we couldn't understand, of course. And then everybody would break into song. And I couldn't figure out how everybody just knew all these same songs, but it was very entertaining to watch because we were both sober and not Norwegian. So, and that was our first night in the island. So it was like this just otherworldly sort of wow.
Well, it's interesting. In September, when we were there, we pretty much had the island to ourselves.
Wow.
There was, I think, no one else on the beaches that we were there. Oh, the other thing we should mention. So one of the beaches that you can bike to from the main area there has an underwater snorkel trail pointing out the sea life. The signs are currently only in Swedish, but I understand there are plans to change that.
Did you do that while you were there?
No, we did not. We didn't.
Okay.
We didn't have time.
I wanted to, but it was a little rainy when we went, and so therefore it was a little colder, and I was just like, yeah, I don't know. It's a little early in the season yet. The water was still very cold. So.
Right. You basically follow, I think it was a rope or a line, basically, between stations. The only other place I've seen that has been in the U.S. Virgin Islands and Buck Island, which is a underwater national park, which has something similar. That one is in English, I should say.
Wow.
Excellent. Yeah. Is there anything else we should talk about the Coaster Islands since we were just there?
No, except the National Marine Park, the Coosterhavet Marine Park, is really beautiful. I mean, we saw a ton of seals and shorebirds, and there's some historic lighthouses and stuff like that. I just recommend if people go that they should definitely check that out. From there, we headed into more like the center of Sweden, and we were kind of in the area of the Göta Canal. I think the town was called Strömstad, and we went to a place called Hornborga. There's a lake there called Lake Hornborga, which is renowned. It's a huge bird sanctuary. So you go there and you literally see just thousands and thousands and thousands of birds swimming and flying and squawking and pooping and doing all the things birds do. And it's very famous because every year in the spring, they get thousands of dancing cranes who come there to nest and have their babies and all of that stuff. So it's sort of an annual spectacle that's sort of famous among bird watchers. So we stayed in that area for a couple of days, and we went to the lake a few times. There's a place that we didn't stay, but we visited called Three Hotel Islana. It's a treehouse hotel, and it's really charming. They have these very quaint treehouse hotel rooms, which are booked up like a year in advance, but it's worth seeing if you've never seen a treehouse hotel. But our favorite place that we went to in that area was called Raw Garden Farm. And again, it was another like sustainable agriculture, organic farming place that was also a tourist attraction people could visit. And there was this guy who owned the farm originally. His son has now taken it over, but the father was fifth generation farmer for this place. And he had a really interesting story. He'd gone to Canada in his youth to become a rodeo rider. And actually became a very successful rodeo rider in Canada, and he'd been a blacksmith and all these other crazy things. And he fell in love with the American bison while he was in Canada. So when he came back to Sweden and took over the farm from his father, he brought in bison from America and started raising bison. And so he's got Highland cattle and bison that he's raising. But what made it especially interesting for us, we'd heard that he had quote-unquote elk. And anybody who's from America, we think of elk as what you see in Yellowstone or Alaska.
And they mean moose when you say elk.
They mean moose, apparently, but we didn't know this. So we're driving around this farm with this guy, and he's like this crusty older gentleman, very sort of cowboyish, reminded me of like a Swedish Clint Eastwood kind of. But all of a sudden, his face just lit up, and he's like, "Do you want to meet my dog?" And Mary and I look at each other, and we're just like, "His dog? Okay, sure." And so he calls out Oscar, his pet's name. And we see this moose come running over the hill. And I mean, like a big moose.
Didn't see that coming.
Running straight at our golf cart. Okay. So he tells Mary to hold this banana. And of course, Oscar comes right to Mary and just gobbles this banana right out of her hands. And then he comes around the golf cart to me. I'm sitting in the back and I'm holding the GoPro filming the whole thing. And we've got video of this on our site if anybody's curious.
if anyone doubts you.
we called it the Moose Whisperer of Sweden because basically this guy's just in love with his moose. So Oscar the moose comes back to me and is like sniffing around hoping there's more food involved. He's drooling, like picture the worst St. Bernard drool you've ever seen. Multiply it times 100. Oscar is drooling that much. I'm literally soaked in moose spit. He's like all up in my business, like a puppy trying to give me kisses and stuff. And so we end up hanging out with a moose for 2 hours and we have dinner with the moose. He's eating his moose kibble or whatever it is. And we're having bison sausage and all this stuff. And then all of a sudden, a female moose comes over the hill and she's got two little twin baby, 14-day-old baby mooses in tow. And of course we just melt and lose it. And this wasn't originally part of our plans for what we were going to do there, but it's just interesting that these weird little out of the way, unique experiences end up becoming the things we remember most about our trips.
Right. Right. Actually, in jumping back to the Coaster Island for a second, cause I forgot to ask you something. One of the places that you would enjoy that I don't know if you got a chance to get to, we had Fika, for people who don't know, Fika is a coffee break. Basically, it's coffee and something sweet, and it comes from a Swedish tradition of trying to get the men not to go to the bars on Sunday, but to stay home and spend some time with the family. And so they would bake something sweet. But we had a Fika, which you will still do in a Swedish business, I understand, once or twice a day. So I don't know how they stay so slim. But at the Coaster Gardens, which is an organic farm there on the other side of the South Coaster Island. So I don't know if you've got a chance to see that, but basically they sell vegetables and herbs and teach people organic gardening and have a bunch of things like that as well.
That's the place I was talking about earlier. The guy from there was the one who guided us all
He was busy guiding a kayak tour that day because he kayaked some other things as well. Okay, got it. I didn't put the name together there. Excellent. Yeah.
But yes, you can't talk about Fika and not talk about those amazing cardamom-infused cinnamon rolls, which seemed to be the most popular sweet everywhere we went. When we went Hotel Koster, when we went to the Gunnebo House, the organic art place, every place we went, they had these delicious cardamom-infused cinnamon rolls that were part of Fika, and that became our favorite daily tradition.
We did not have that, but we had like muffins with fresh berries. So,
oh my God. Yeah.
Pretty great.
Yeah.
Excellent. And where did you go from there?
I have to mention, we stayed at this place called Nastegarden Bed and Breakfast in the Hornborga area. We really like it. It was just a couple that we sort of fell in love with. They were about our age, sort of 40s. And he was a classical music composer. And they had bought this old historic home that was like 150 years old and were refurbishing it as a bed and breakfast. Mm-hmm. We just loved them. We had so much in common. I mean, the thing I loved about the people of Sweden was they seemed really interested in having deep conversations. Everybody we met was just so deep and interesting. And because this guy was a classical music composer and I'm a music fanatic, we had a lot to talk about. So I just wanted to give them a shout out because they were so cool, and it's a mom and pop type place, and they're expanding their place and building some new rooms onto it.
Well, and the one thing I have to wonder there is, we may go many places where people want to have deep conversations, but there is a language gap.
True.
And the fact that so many people speak such good English in Sweden really does enable a lot of conversations, even if all you know of Swedish is tack, många tack, many thanks, that you can still get around and just fine in Sweden.
Yeah.
I would recommend learning a little Swedish, but as we say, I really don't know very much.
Yeah, my knowledge of Swedish was limited to the Swedish chef on The Muppet Show.
And I hope you didn't do that at any time, because I was tempted but never did.
Yeah, I did not do that, but that was kind of my frame of reference. So anyway, from there, we went over to the Göta Canal, which is huge. It was originally constructed between 1810 and 1832, and it goes all the way from the center of Sweden all the way down to Gothenburg. We stayed at this place, Norkvarn Hotel, which was interesting not so much because of the hotel, but because they were having a huge wedding with the daughter of a local politician that night. We weren't actually able to stay in the hotel. So they put us up in a house right on the canal. For anybody who doesn't know much about canals, they have these locks that they use to lower and raise the water. And they used to have a lock keeper who would stay in this house right on the lock. And it was
little tiny house then.
Yeah, little tiny house. It actually was quite big for a lock house.
For a lock keeper house.
I was shocked. It was a 3-bedroom house, full kitchen.
Wow. Okay.
It was huge.
I'm used to these being like 10 by 10.
Yeah, it was shocking. And there was a little 10 by 10 building right next to it. But apparently this was where the guy lived with his family for years and years. And like everything else in Sweden, it had been there for 100, 150 years. And so we got to stay in this little house. Like, we could look out our window, and 15 feet away, we would see the boats going up and down as the locks were adjusted. And it was really cool because it was just such a beautiful stretch of the canal. There were people walking and biking and romantic couples hanging out. And we saw the wedding carriage go right by our house. It was just like, it was almost like a little slice of what Europe was probably like 100 years ago. And so charming. And so different from every other thing that we'd done in West Sweden, that it really just reinforced how much diversity there was in the types of ecosystems and attractions, basically.
Excellent. And what was your next stop?
Well, I think from there, we went back to Gothenburg, and we spent a couple more nights there and had meals at a couple of different restaurants. We were originally supposed to go. They've got a really cool amusement park in Gothenburg called Liseberg. And the interesting thing about it is that the park uses all of its energy from renewable resources, and they have a wind power station there to generate energy on the property. But unfortunately, by the time we got back to Gothenburg, it was raining, and we weren't able to make it over there in the time we had left. But it was one of those really interesting things in conjunction with the rental bike system and the bus system and all of the things we mentioned earlier. We don't usually spend a lot of time in cities, but it was one of those cities that was very interesting because it did have so many eco-friendly initiatives going on.
Mm-hmm. We saw a number of wind generators, large wind generators when we were in that part of Sweden.
Oh, yeah. Driving around, you saw them everywhere, which was bizarre to me because I'm from the American Southeast and we don't have any of them.
No, not so much. Don't have quite the wind. We have quite a few up in this area. One thing we should say about the driving around that's interesting is if you get on the highway in Gothenburg, you can very quickly make your way up towards the Norwegian border. But if you want to go to the coast, you kind of have to go up to the highway and then back out to the coast and then up to the highway and back out to the coast, because it's just a very irregular shape, let's just say. Lots of inlets, lots of even a few little fjords and such in that area.
And it's funny because there were so many little villages along that route going up the coast
right.
that people told us were amazing. And of course, we didn't have time to go to all of them.
Well, let me make some suggestions for your next trip.
Please do.
Because here's some places that you missed. So one of the places we stopped, as I mentioned, was Fjällbacka. Mm-hmm. And Fjällbacka is this beautiful little picturesque town. Starts to have a number of different tourism options there in terms of whaling visits and in terms of going out to the weather islands. But it's also known for an author. And I will admit that this was an author I didn't know and everybody else on our trip did. And that's Camilla Läckberg.
Hmm.
I don't know if you know her, but she writes murder mysteries, and all of her murder mysteries are set in this little town. So no. We had a chance. We actually met her mother, but we also, every time they would point out something in the town, it's like, see that island over there and see how there's the diving board on there? Yeah, a body was found there. Of course, nobody has ever been killed in this town, certainly in the last 1,000 years, probably. It's this picturesque little town, but in her novels,
wow,
people die all the time there. So I think a number of people come to that town now because of her connection. But also then it does have this, it's kind of the gateway then to the Weather Islands. And of the two, I would have to say the Coaster Islands or the Weather Islands. The Coaster Islands is bigger and has more to do and has the marine sanctuary, but the Weather Islands are just more dramatic. They are basically solid rock. And the cover art for this episode will be a picture of the Weather Islands. So for those of you who are looking at that, so we went out there to the Weather Islands and to this guest house, and I'm going to try and butcher the name of the guest house here, or at least I'm going to butcher it, and that's the Väderöarnas guest house, and it's out there on this rugged outcropping. And so people said, well, how long is it open? They said, oh, it's open all year long. And so even in the winter, they have some of the boats that can make it out there. They're catamarans, and so they're stable enough that they can make it through the bad weather. And they're booked up in New Year's to 2020.
Wow.
But this would be the, I want to get away from it. I want to get out and have a couple days in the Weather Islands. And I would do that if I went back there. I would love to take my wife and just rent a kayak when I'm there and go explore some of these little tiny islands and such. But that was just a very dramatic and interesting place.
I feel like the islands of Sweden, I've never read much about them before we went, but it's one of those places. I think we were only there like 2 days. I could definitely go back and spend a week just exploring the islands and the coastal towns and not even heading anywhere else.
Agreed, yeah. Well, and that's just the islands of the West. I mean, Sweden's, I've heard more about the archipelago off of Stockholm, which we've talked about on this show. But this is just a very different, entirely different area here. The other place that I would recommend is Smögen. And for those people who are trying to figure out how to spell Fjällbacka or Smögen or any of the other places we named, remember that in the lyrics of this episode are all the links to the places that we talk about now. So that should help you. Someone has carefully put those in there, and it's either me or Jeffrey, our editor. But the Smögen was interesting. It's another picturesque town, but three things that we did there that I thought were worthy of mention. One is, I was there actually, you mentioned being there for Volvo. I was there for the Ice Bug Challenge, and Ice Bug makes an outdoor shoe in Gothenburg, and they do once a year a three-day either hike or run along the coastal route in outside of Smögen. And it basically, it's like 110 kilometers or something like that during the 3 days. We only did part of it. If you're going to run it, I just can't imagine the trail runners here because, so the path between one of these sections we did that was about 18 kilometers. The first 6 kilometers, we were at just a kind of a normal walking pace. It really didn't take us that long. But the next part, you're scrambling up over these rocks and such. But it is a very lovely route for hiking. This coastal route that's marked along this jagged coast here is really, on a beautiful day like we were hiking, is something I would highly, highly recommend. We also did, from the Smögen area, not from Smögen itself, we did sea kayaking out in and amongst these islands, and I'd love to do that again.
Mm-hmm.
Although the surprise for me is there are two types of sea kayaks, and I had been on the open frame kind, before, where you're sitting on the top of the boat, you're not in the boat.
Right.
And those are wider and more stable. And I was in a single boat this time, and I'm very unstable in a single sea kayak. So that was a bit of a surprise for me. We had to switch me into a double, where my large frame was a little closer to the water surface, a little head. But you know, wonderful going out in that area. Love to do that again. And then the third thing was, there is an interesting zoo, and I know you're not necessarily a big fan of zoos, Brett, but I think you would like Norden's Ark. It's a zoo only of endangered species.
Mm.
So most of the species here can't be reintroduced into the wild, although they are reintroducing some of the falcons, for instance, which are native to Sweden. They have been breeding them here in captivity and then reintroducing those. But they do also have snow leopards and wolves and tigers. And they're in these huge, like the tigers, remember I mentioned that the inland has all of these mountains of granite. Basically, the tiger has his own mountain of granite that he looks like he's playing King of the Hill on. So it's a it's a very beautiful enclosure and large where these animals are. I thought it was a very interesting experience. And then they also do have a program where families can come and pay to volunteer and help feed the tigers. And it's just an interesting area. And you can see some of the pictures that we took of snow leopards and tigers and things like that.
Cool.
Were just wonderful, in part because you had to climb up over where you could look down on the tigers, for instance, and not be looking at them through the fence that you were glad was there. But on the other hand, that tiger was a little distracted by the sheep that he could see in the distance. It just couldn't quite work out how to get to. But
yeah, such a tease. It sounds like a cool place.
And then the other thing is, I enjoyed as a photographer in Smögen were two things. One is, as we were hiking in the trails, you'll see pictures that I took of these red toadstools or mushrooms with polka dots on them that we saw everywhere that were gorgeous. And then also just the boathouses.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're actually rented out. Yeah, a lot of people come to this region in the summertime. So some of these boathouses are now rented out basically during the summertime as guest housing, or the family will move into the boathouse and then rent out the house. So a lot of house rental is done in the area too. So as you think about visiting there, look at the hotel options and the inns and such, but also think about hotel rentals as being an option in that particular area.
Did you guys get over to the really colorful boathouses that were on Koster Island?
Well, we saw some in the distance on North Koster Island, but we saw some in Smögen that were notably picturesque.
Yeah, I mean, they almost had, to me, like the color of like the waterfront down in Willemstad, Curacao.
Just
those vibrant colors.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, no, we saw things like that in a number of places, but not specifically in the Koster Islands.
Well, people who are listening, if you go to the Koster Islands, get them to take you there because it's really cool and you can stand on a dock like right in front of them. So it looks, you get the panorama right behind you. It's really cool.
There was also, we did see an aquarium. It's in the Smögen area. It's a small aquarium, but it's all the native species from that ecosphere there. So it was fascinating, including one blue lobster, which is what a albino lobster looks like, which is news to me. Apparently, when they have no natural coloring, they are blue. And not just, I understand, from the coldness of the water, but...
I'm not sure Mary has actually recovered from our dry suit dive in that region, so I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to get to go cold water diving anytime soon, but boy, oh boy, it's interesting.
What was one surprise for you, this region of Sweden?
I mean, there were so many, but I think I was just really taken by the kindness of the people. We had quite a few times where we were not really sure where to go, not really sure what to do. We had one time where we were running late for the ferry to go to the Koster Islands, and we couldn't read the they had these parking lots where you would leave your car for a couple of days, and we couldn't read them because they were only in Swedish. And there were people who helped read and made us realize, oh, you can't park here because this one's only good for 24 hours. You've got to go over there. And then there was somebody else at the other one. The machine was busted and we were freaking out because we were going to miss our ferry. And they actually called the company for us, and the company said, don't worry about it, you can park there. And then there was another place where we didn't have any Swedish coins, and which I believe are the
Kroner.
Yeah, we didn't have any, and we had to park, and we were running late for our appointment, and this older gentleman just paid it for us. Didn't even ask. We were asking him if he had change, and he was like, oh, I'll just pay for you. And it was just everywhere we went, everybody was so kind and helpful. They didn't know we were journalists. They didn't know who we were. They just knew we needed help, and they helped without asking. And you see that in a lot of places around the world, but I found the Swedish people to be especially kind and generous.
We've mentioned that my prettiest place that I was standing was the Weather Islands. If you had to say, of all the places you saw, you're standing in the prettiest place, where are you standing? What are you looking at?
I'm really a water person. I'm like, by nature, there's like a spiritual energy that comes over me when we're on the water. And we stayed at Hotel Koster on the Koster Islands, and they put us in the most remote room that they had. It was like as far back on the property as you can get. And when we sat on our back, there was like a little tiny back patio with chairs, and we looked out over the marine part. We didn't see any other buildings. We didn't see any other travelers. It was just looking out on the nature, and you could see all these other little islands, and you would occasionally see a boat going in the distance or whatever. That view was one that, like I said, I wish I could go back there and just spend like a week, because it was just so quiet and picturesque and just perfectly in tune with what I like when I travel.
Excellent. And we had a lunch at the same hotel you're talking about. Even if you don't have a room there, they have a wonderful veranda, which is not a Swedish word, there, where you can look at the, there's a marina of boats, of sailboats down below there on the waters. So gorgeous place. Grand old hotel.
Yeah. And they, apparently there were people we saw from our balcony or whatever you want to call it. We were looking down and people were just fishing out langoustines or crayfish or whatever you call them, just right there off the shore. They were just up turning rocks and boom, there they were. It was crazy.
Interesting. Any warning you would give? One thing you should know before you go to this part of West Sweden?
Everybody speaks English, but not all of the signs are in English. So
that's what I was thinking too, yeah.
The parking meters were very troubling for us because we just couldn't understand them. So leave a little time in your schedule if you're not sure of where you're going or what you're doing, because that was the only real problem we saw. There were always people willing to help. The fact that the parking meters and things did not have English was a little bit difficult if you're in a hurry.
Well, and my impression, and tell me if you had the same impression, is we're talking about an area that is gorgeous and definitely deserves tourism. It gets a lot of Norwegian tourists, and it definitely gets a lot of Swedish tourists. But I don't think it gets as many international tourists as it necessarily deserves for how pretty an area it is. And I think that's part of it is the tourism infrastructure, as my impression was, is still developing and somewhat in terms of international tourism. And I think we're seeing, would talk to us about, oh, now there's a new fishing trip that you can go out on, and now there's a new such and such. So we're seeing that develop now. But I think it's actually a good time to go in terms of if you want to go with a, not everybody does go yet.
Well, that's Green Globe Travel. One of the things we sort of earned a reputation for is sort of finding these little out of the way spots that maybe have not been oversaturated with tourists. Because frankly, we don't like going places where there's tons of other tourists around. That's sort of our MO. So I totally agree with you. I think it's a undiscovered gem. Swedish people may know about it. Norwegian people may know about it, but I don't know anybody in America. I mean, I don't think other than you and I haven't seen hardly any other bloggers writing about West Sweden. It's definitely a undiscovered area for Western and North American, I guess, travelers.
And I would say you saw it not be that busy in June. I saw it completely empty in September. August is going to be very busy. So just plan your trip accordingly. There are going to be more things open, obviously, then also, and you'll have the long, long days to enjoy it. So June sounds like it might be a real good time to go from that
point
of view.
June was awesome. Yeah. I mean, there was even like when we were in the city of Gothenburg. So we get there at like 8 o'clock in the morning because of the time difference. And we go to try and get an early check into our hotel. and they were trying to get us a room. And apparently that day they had both the largest gay pride festival that the city has once a year, and one of Sweden's most famous rock bands was doing a concert right around the corner at a huge arena that same night. And we went out to dinner at about, I don't know, 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock or something after sleeping in for a little bit. And after this festival and after this huge concert had started, there was not a single speck of garbage in the streets. And I looked. I looked for cigarette butts. I looked for anything. It was remarkable to me how clean that city was. I was just spellbound by it. And I kept going as we would drive around the city. I would look for it. Any sign of waste or refuse anywhere. Nothing. It was amazing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
As we go to wrap this up, anything else we should say about West Sweden before we get to our last three questions?
People should go there. Especially for people who like off the beaten path nature.
And I would say and outdoors. Yeah.
Yeah. Nature and outdoor activity.
Exactly. The other thing I should say, I should have said with Fjällbacka, is if when you go there, climb the rock, and you won't have to wonder what I'm talking about. The little town is at the base of a rock, and you can climb up there and get a wonderful view of the area.
Even if people don't necessarily love nature and the outdoors, if you just like European culture and really good food, you could go to Gothenburg and have a completely different experience. Mm-hmm. The restaurants there are incredible. I mean, if you're like Chris and don't like seafood, then you're missing out. But there's such amazing food there. Oh, my goodness.
Excellent. Last three questions. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in West Sweden.
Being slobbered on by a moose is probably my best answer for that. That memory kind of sticks out. Yeah.
Excellent. Oh, one thing we forgot, and this is because it was also forgotten on my itinerary. This was my only source of frustration with my trip is we got to Fjällbacka, and there was an art piece that we were looking at there that gave homage to these rock carvings that were 12 miles away were in a UNESCO World Heritage Site, the rock carvings in Tanum, and I didn't get there. Unfortunately, I was on this organized trip, and it's like, sorry, you're mentioning a UNESCO World Heritage Site. I'm 12 miles away, and we're not going. So don't do like that. If you get there, there's really pretty only much two UNESCO World Heritage Sites in Western Sweden. The other one is not quite as far west and is a wireless antenna, oddly enough, a radio station. But this one is right in that very area, right by 12 miles from Fjällbacka.
Yeah, I mean, we were driving towards Grebbestad, and we saw the sign for Fjällbacka, and we'd heard such great things. And it's like, we're right here, but we didn't have time. And it's just one of those things where there's so much different stuff you could do. I mean, I definitely think I could spend a few weeks in that region, no problem, and have plenty of things to do.
Sure. Finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in Western Sweden when what?
When you see more wind turbines than people.
I think for me, it's when the landscape is sea and rock. That dramatic landscape for me just really set it apart. As I said, my original impression wasn't overwhelming, and then as we got into places like Fjällbacka, it was just incredibly beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to summarize West Sweden in just three words, which three words would you use?
Great.
Okay.
Green.
Yeah. And well, there you're using it twice in different ways. Okay.
Moose.
Excellent.
Sorry,
that is a memorable experience. I can understand that. Or Elka, as you talk about in Swedish.
Here's the thing. I travel the world a lot, and I only know one place in the world where you can go and pretty much count on the opportunity to hug an adult moose. So for me, that's going to separate it from everywhere else. Okay. I know I can go to West Sweden and I can hug a moose.
I think that is unique. Brent, where can people read more about your travels?
Well, of course, they can follow us on greenglobaltravel.com, which is our main site. We cover ecotourism and conservation and adventure travel and all of those associated subjects. And of course, we've got a second site that is sort of new to us. It's called Green Travel Reviews, where we just review green hotels, eco tours, eco-friendly restaurants, and things like that all around the world. But our big new project that we've been working on is called Green Travel Media, and it's sort of a talent agency for the bloggers and other media professionals that have an interest in ecotourism and adventure travel. And we're basically working to connect those people with brands that are looking to emphasize sustainable initiatives and trying to find great work for great bloggers with great companies. So we're mixing all three of these projects together, and we've got a great new charity project we're doing called Just One Rhino, where we're going to be raising money around the holidays for rhino conservation in Africa. And so that's basically what we've got going on over the next few months.
Excellent. I thought for sure you were going to say Just One Moose, but I guessed wrong on that one.
Apparently, there's a couple of 100,000 mooses just in Sweden alone, so I think they're doing all right for now.
Our guest again has been Brett Love. Brett, thanks so much for coming on the Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your newfound love for West Sweden.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Appreciate you having me.
I normally do news at this time, but it looks like the application Reddit that I've been using to keep track of news has broken for me, and therefore all my news bookmarks have gone away. One piece of news, though, is that we're probably going to skip next week's show. My daughter is getting married, and as much as I love you, I love her more. In news of the community, I got some feedback on last week's show on Baltimore. The first one was from Jordan, who said, "Been listening to the podcast for almost 2 years, and I really enjoy it. You do a good job, and thanks for opening up so many places to me and so many people. I've just listened to the episode on Baltimore, and as I am a born and bred Baltimorean," which I did not know was the word for that, "I had some input. The episode was very thorough, but I just want to add some places and some corrections. First, this drives me crazy. Thames Street in Fells Point is actually pronounced with the TH, not like Thames. And Broadway and Alisania Streets, pronounced Alizon, have arguably better nightlife and less crowded bars on a Friday or Saturday night. Another neighborhood around the Inner Harbor is Federal Hill, so named after the steep hill that borders the harbor with a cannon situated on top to shoot down into downtown should there be an uprising, as there was during the Civil War. Federal Hill is another great spot for nightlife, and Cross Street Market is a great place for lunch or just food shopping during the day. Also, there's a free bus service called Charm City Connector that links Locust Point, Federal Hill, Inner Harbor, Downtown, Fells Point, and Canton. Lastly, there are a few places where you can rent sailboats or be taken out on one by a qualified skipper. The first is Downtown Sailing Center in Locust Point, which offers private lessons, and the second is Getaway Sailing in Canton, which offers harbor cruises. I would absolutely stress the importance of getting out on the water while in a harbor city, and if someone were to come to Baltimore for just an afternoon, they should go sailing or take a tour boat. Sorry that's so long. Baltimore is such a great place to live, Jordan." And I should say that one of the reasons I think my daughter, who is getting married to a family from Annapolis, which we mentioned in this show, is probably not moving back to California, is every time we call her on the weekend, she's out on the sailboat. And then I heard from Erica, and you thought Jordan's was long. Erica's even longer. Erica also thought we missed some things, although I would have to say didn't enjoy the episode as much, thought we didn't do as much about the local character. So I'm not going to read all of the input we got from Erica, but take a look at that. It has lots of places in terms of where to get the best seafood, best ethnic food, best beers, best dive bars. So Erica, thank you so much for that resource. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com or put your comments on this episode at amateurtraveler.com, as Erica did, so that we can share that with everybody. Remember, you can find the links for everything we talked about in this episode in the lyrics of this episode. And in a few weeks from now, thanks to our friends at J-Way Travel, who are leaders in Eastern European travel, you can also find a full transcript of this episode. Join the Facebook community, facebook.com/amateurtraveler, or follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. If you don't want to follow me on Twitter, you can also follow me to Morocco. Remember, we're still doing that trip in April of 2015. For more information, check out the book travel tab on Amateur Traveler. And as always, thanks so much for listening. I should be heading home, but maybe not.